The Wintrust Business Lunch with John Beaver, the financial advisor at Phase 3 Advisory Services. Hey, John, welcome back to the show.
Thanks. It's good to be here today.
I know your take on the economy is that it is strong. Is that a problem today, John?
Strong, weakening maybe a little bit. No, it's not a problem. We always want to have a solid economy if we can. The problem is we're trying to fight inflation at the same time, and that creates tension, and that's creating tension in the markets as we've seen the last, probably week or two.
No kidding. Well, we've had a couple of up days, but nothing to make up for the last couple weeks of down days.
In fact, where the market is at right now, it may be coming to an inflection point where it may turn back down again. So that may be something we want to take a look at.
Why? What's happening today that might cause that to happen?
We're getting back to a moving average, which is a key moving average. So we kind of crashed through that, come back through to the upside. And today looks like a classic setup for a failure on the rally. I'm actually expecting the market to drop down to about 4,800 on the S&P 500, which would be an absolutely normal pullback for the market. About 10%, which is what we could expect about once a year. We had one last year. Why not have one this year?
What would that represent right now, 4,800 on the S&P?
I'm sorry, I didn't catch that.
Well, as a percent then, if it's down 10%, how much of it are we down already? How much further?
Yeah,
or
we're down about 3%, and so 4,800 wouldn't quite be 10%. We'd be down around the 4,700, but 4,800, there's a real key level of support there. So it looks to me like 4,700 to 4,800 is the most likely stopping point.
It seems to me, though, that this week the news that Americans continue to spend, right, that the economy is still churning along, has been almost a problem. Or did the economy pull back enough to maybe give the Fed some hint that they could drop interest rates?
Well, that's what the Fed is trying to figure out. You know, if we kind of put this all together, jobs report strong, core CPI, warming, that wasn't so good. That created some consternation a couple weeks ago. PPI, though, is cooling. That's producer price index. Retail sales up, new home sales warming, durable goods orders strong, GDP coming in a little stronger than expected, although we had an initial reading that was a little bit more in line, but we'll just have to see. That's an interesting one where the Fed out of Atlanta, they see a stronger GDP than has been initially reported, but we don't have the final numbers yet. And then jobless claims are still strong.
You mentioned to producer Pete that Washington is oblivious and makes the situation worse. What are you saying there?
Yeah, so the issue there has to do really with the amount of debt and the interest rate that we have to pay. And in order to pay that interest, we have to borrow a bunch of money. And borrowing out of Washington actually is a creator of inflation. So if we're trying to solve the inflation problem, then Washington needs to balance the budget. That's really the bottom line. So what the Fed is doing here, the Fed is trying to fight inflation while D.C. is creating inflation. Those two are fighting each other. And so what the Fed is looking at right now is it's this back-and-forth battle that's taking place. We had actually had an inflation reading today on PCE prices that was encouraging. Came in at 0.3, which wasn't hotter than expected, not cooler than expected, but it takes us back to where the Fed is probably not going to make any move.
Boy, the idea that we need to stop overspending is so pie in the sky to me. You know, like we're talking about inflation and the Fed, and can they lower rates two or three times or zero times? But those are very here and now considerations. The idea that we would attack the deficit is something I don't see happening anytime soon. You know, that gives me pause. That's like, well, then nothing's going to happen if that's what I'm waiting for.
So when we advise our clients, we're looking at the same thing. We really don't think this is going to get resolved in Washington anytime soon. So that means inflation is probably here to stay. It's going to ebb and flow, but it is going to be, in our opinion, it's going to be a problem over perhaps the next two decades, depending on when Washington finally wakes up to the problem that we have here.
Talking to John Beaver on the Wintrust Business Lunch, the financial advisor at Phase 3 Advisory Services. He said the deficit is the elephant in the room a minute ago, and we're never going to get inflation. Well, that's my question. So if they finally did start to whittle away, pass a balanced budget, even have such excess that we can begin to pay down the debt. What would that do to some of these problems like inflation, John?
No, I think it would certainly help on the inflation front. And you're right. They don't have to balance the budget tomorrow. And if there's anybody in D.C. listening right now, please work towards balancing the budget. That's the direction that we need to go, because that will help reduce inflation pressure. The other part is when the Federal Reserve puts a bunch of money into the economy, and understand why they do that when we get into trouble. But they really stay too long after the financial crisis and stay too long after COVID. And I think they're starting to admit that, too. But it's really this looming debt issue, because we're adding $1.5 to $2 trillion every year to the debt, the almost $35 trillion now worth of debt. And it is projected by the OMB and even the CBO, this is projected to get quite large, $50 to $55 trillion in the next 10 years. And that will create a whole other set of problems. You know, it's kind of like, hey, the burger and fries and shake tastes real good while the patient is dying and while we're clogging the arteries. And so, yeah, it's not going to be the most popular thing in the world to start to work towards a balanced budget, but it's really necessary.
$55 trillion over 10 years on interest, on service to the debt? Is that what you're saying?
No, what I'm saying is the actual debt itself will be somewhere between 50 to 55 trillion. And this is why the Fed is fighting so hard to keep inflation down. You know, they could just stop right now and say, okay, we'll live with 3% inflation. No, they've got it. Their target is 2. And the reason their target is 2 is they've got to keep inflation down so they can keep interest rates down because of the debt service, the cost of the interest on that bloating debt.
It's interesting you say that, because I've asked you and others many times, what's so magical about 2? And I think what's magical, as you put it, about 2 is that it's less than 3, that it generates less that we owe. And that's that I can get my head around. You told Pete only Japan and Italy have a worse ratio of debt to the GDP, right?
Yeah, that's correct. Japan is crazy. They're 263% debt to GDP. Italy's at 138, and we're close behind at about 121% of our total U.S. government debt to our gross domestic product in a year. And the CBO, they project that by about 2054, they expect that to be 166%. So again, it's not like it's going to be the end of the world, but every time we add a little bit more, it just makes things a little bit worse. And it's much better to deal with it now than to have a catastrophe 30, 35 years down the road.
How many of the things driving inflation right now are specific to events today, like a supply chain disruption or a bad coffee crop or a bad cocoa crop or bird flu? I mean, you know, those aren't economic problems the administration can address or fix. How much of inflation is being driven by those kinds of things?
Yeah, those kinds of things, as you just mentioned, are pretty limited. It's really the big picture of the spending and the printing that does it. Because, yeah, we go buy a chocolate bar, price of cocoa is way up, coffee's going up. But those are temporary things that will resolve themselves. Supply chain issues eventually resolve themselves. You know, right now we're going to be coming into a crunch with computer chips because we need to create a lot more capacity to produce what we need for AI. But we'll get these things resolved, and those are much smaller. It really is in the big picture. It's the overspending.
You want to talk about tax proposals, and is that on the horizon here?
Well, Biden proposed something here on capital gains. It's probably worth mentioning. I don't think it's going to go through, but increasing the capital gains and dividend tax rate to what would be ordinary income tax rates is what it looks like. And some of the challenges there probably won't raise as much revenue as they think, because the ultra wealthy have all sorts of ways of kind of working around that, things such as family foundations. It's likely to reduce the value of the stock market. You know, the stock market's riding good here. Don't worry about a 10% decline. That's just normal breathing in the market. But we got an environment here where there's a good pressure of IPOs coming. The markets may be a little bit overvalued, but not too much as long as we can keep the interest rates low. And so a raising the capital gains rate does historically tend to hurt the stock market. When that capital gains rate drops, historically that tends to help the stock market. And so it probably won't go through, but if it does, that's something to watch for your portfolio and what might happen with stocks for a period of time. About 1 to 2 years is what we see the damage is done, where the market adjusts to the new tax rate.
Is there a part of the market where you see opportunity right now?
Oh, yes. Always opportunity. And diversification, more important than ever right now. You know, we've had this tremendous run on the S&P 500. And remember, we talked about this before. The S&P 500 is quoted just about everywhere. And in your 401k plans and those S&P 500 funds, they are capitalization weighted. That means that right now, 25% of the money in that fund is in five stocks. So you want to go equal weight. If you're going to own the S&P 500, own that on an equal basis, each company equal. We see an opportunity in mid-sized companies versus large, and again, it's because of that bloat at the top. We still see the opportunity in value stocks over growth stocks. Not that you abandon growth, but don't ignore the value side. And in specific sectors, we think that going forward, the highest free cash flow sectors are going to be the most important area to be, especially because of the inflation pressure that's there. And that's still energy and even financials and even utilities. And don't forget international. It's easy to forget that. If you have no international in your portfolio and you have a long-term portfolio, you should meet with your advisor. If you don't have one, give us a call. We can talk about allocations to international.
How many rate cuts are we going to get? Zero, one, two, or three?
Well, this year, my guess is one. I think they'll do a token one, maybe November, December. I really don't think they're going to do it beforehand. It's too soon for June. I think July also is off the table just because of the readings coming in as strong as they are. And so then they get into the political season. They don't want to be viewed as political, even though they should just ignore that altogether. So that puts me in the camp of maybe one rate cut. And maybe next year, maybe one, maybe two, but I just don't see seven rate cuts because of the strength in the economy and the overspending.
John Beaver, financial advisor at Phase 3 Advisory Services. You want to reach out to him, type in Phase and then the number 3advisory.com, Phase 3 Advisory. Thanks a lot, John.
You're welcome. Thanks for having me.
Tom Appel, the publisher of Consumer Guide Automotive and the host of Consumer Guide Car Stuff podcast. Hey, Tom, welcome back to the show.
Oh, good afternoon. Thanks for having me.
Am I reading that the market is changing its mind a little bit about EVs, or is that your mind that is changing a little bit about EVs?
Well, that's a good question. As we all know, the EV era launched with a bang, and if we go as far back as 2011, when Tesla launched, we were busy watching Tesla's business model, but the other thing that happened was that Tesla kept selling more and more and more cars, so it seemed like the American public really liked electric vehicles, or at least electric Teslas. And we have rolled into a really interesting point now, a decade and a half later now, where the public seems to have gotten as many EVs as they want, or their interest in them has diminished somewhat. And part of that is that it was easy for early adopters to buy EVs because they could charge at home, they could afford the vehicles, and it just generally went better for them. But as we move now to mainstream buyers from early adopters, things are getting more complicated, and that's where the infrastructure kicks in, the cost of the vehicles kicks in, and then a general fear of change, obviously, is affecting that, too. So this first quarter of the year, and specifically in February, for which we have Tesla data, EV sales took a downturn for the first time in a while.
I don't understand how things are getting worse, though. I mean, it's not like they're taking charging stations down. As each year passes and there are more electric vehicles and more charging opportunities, how is it that the market is souring on these things?
I think we're seeing a delayed response to a lot of the bad news about the EV charging infrastructure. And the early charging infrastructure that was out there was pretty bad. My personal experience has been terrible. And people are reporting this in social media. And I think that if you have a pretty, you know, wide-eyed, interested view in EVs, and then you read that they're really difficult to charge, you might back off for a while. So right now we have a massive government plan to expand the EV charging network. And hopefully what we're going to see is that that's going to get better. It's going to improve. And access to charging is going to improve. Additionally, Ford and Rivian now allow their shoppers, their owners, the EV owners, to charge at the Tesla charging network, which is a wonderful thing because that is a really reliable network, and there's lots of them out there.
So government dollars are going to go more to – originally they were subsidizing the vehicles.
Yes.
It sounds smart to spend government dollars on charging stations right now.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense, and we're seeing them show up in places where they wouldn't be. Part of the problem with the original charging – the companies that were putting in charging stations is they were putting them in places where they were in highest demand, which makes sense. That's logical. But there are whole states that only have a few chargers in them. And it's very hard to sell an EV in Nebraska.
Still, I haven't heard from anybody. I mean, when we had that really terrible cold snap in January, suddenly people's battery life was going from 60 to 20% just like that. But that's the only time I've heard uniform complaints, mostly from the EV owners I've talked to. And I have in my head three that come to mind now. They all love them. They don't have a problem with them. Do you hear complaints from people specifically saying, I wish I hadn't bought this thing?
No, actually, and it's a funny thing. Detractors will point out that something like one in five EV owners say that they wouldn't buy another EV. Well, that's an 80% retention rate, which is super desirable. That's a great number. So it seems like people who own EVs probably, in most cases, bought them understanding what they were getting and can charge at home and really enjoy them. And they are a better driving experience.
Okay. So when you talked about that next group of listeners, like the early adopters bought the EVs. Lord knows they bought the Teslas at super inflated rates or at expensive prices.
Yeah.
What's the next batch of consumers that we're talking about?
We're talking about mainstream shoppers now, people who were going to replace their gasoline vehicle, don't care a lot about cars, and I think that's key, too. These are people who view cars less as enthusiast toys and more as just daily transportation and maybe even as necessary evils. Those are the people that need to be sold next. And new car shoppers are, by definition, somewhat affluent, so they can generally afford to do this. But we are seeing a wave of affordable EVs hitting the market soon, and that may change things a lot.
A wave of EVs hitting the market soon. A new kind of car, a new batch of cars? What are you talking about there?
We have, like, for example, the Chevrolet Equinox is coming to the market this year, and that is, they're promising a base price of around $30,000. That's probably going to be a non-existent model, but even if you can buy one for $35,000, $36,000, or $37,000, that is under the average price of a new vehicle, and they're promising range of up to up to 300 miles. So this is a very practical alternative for a lot of people if you're looking for something that, you know, falls under a price point and still gets pretty good range.
What's the average price of a new gas-powered vehicle these days?
It's still around $45,000, the average transaction price, and it has stayed high. The good news there is that we're starting to see incentives show up, so that supply problem that we've been talking about for a few years is easing up.
Are the manufacturers going to discontinue some models?
You know, there's a funny story right now, and we don't know all the details, but Toyota has, rumor has it, decided to change one of its popular vehicles, possibly the Highlander, the small version of the Highlander, to EV only. And so they would be replacing a very popular gasoline-powered vehicle with an electric vehicle, if that's what's happening, but that's the rumor right now.
This is a pause, though, right? This is a dip in the inevitable upward line, right?
It is, and there's a lot of things going on here. Right now, we're not fully benefiting from the advancement of battery technology. Batteries are going to get a lot cheaper relatively soon, which is going to make EVs more price competitive. And once EVs are more price competitive, people are going to see the value there, too. You're saving money on fuel. The vehicles are quicker, quieter, and run better and require less maintenance. So the reasons to switch are there.
I wonder if the marketing of the cars is going to change. Frankly, I haven't seen, I'm trying to recall right now, an electric vehicle commercial I've seen on TV or the internet, and I don't know that I have. The Tesla owners were just selling it word to mouth, but I wonder if the pitch is, hey, you can go farther, or now you can get it for $35,000, or it's green, it's good for the environment, or the government will subsidize the vehicle or the charging stations. How do you expect that they're going to promote these cars?
The primary fear seems to be range. And so range is what needs to be sold, I think, to consumers first. And then I think just change is one, too. And I have not seen this addressed, but I think it is daunting for people who just drive a gasoline car now and want to replace it to think about calling a contractor and having a charger installed in their garage. There are a lot of unknowns there and a lot of work that you have to do. And it probably feels in advance like more work than it's going to be. But, I think a lot of people think, who has time for that?
Okay, 312-981-7200 is the phone number. Tom Appel can talk about this and cars and trucks and SUVs. You got a question or a text right now? We'd love to hear your voice. 312-981-7200. You can get in line now and get your question answered. Let's get you more business news first. Here's Steve Grzanich.
Start your timer. It's time for the Wintrust Business Minute, sharing Chicago's business news of the day. The median asking price for Chicago area homes hit a new record high last week. That's according to the online real estate marketplace Redfin. The median asking price was $362,561 for the week ending April 21st. It's the first time the price has gone above $360,000. It's about 7% higher than a year ago. Low housing inventory is propelling sellers to ask for higher prices. Nationwide asking prices also reached a new high last week at $419,925. The national increase was just shy of 7%. The new owners of The Onion say they'll keep the staff intact in Chicago, where the publication has been based since 2012. The satirical news outlet has been sold to a company called Global Tetrahedron. The Global Tetrahedron is a running gag from The Onion. One of the buyers is Jeff Lawson, the former Twilio CEO and co-founder. Several other digital media veterans are also part of the purchasing team. Lawson says The Onion's new owners will eventually introduce new products and get into new mediums. The price of the deal hasn't been disclosed. I'm Steve Grzanich, and that's your Wintrust Business Minute.
Okay, let's do an update of the business of food with Steve Alexander.
Yeah, thank you, and it's a Mr. Fizz Friday. Jim Fizzell, our gardening guru, is with us again. And hey, Jim, what's on your mind?
Today's Arbor Day, you know.
Yeah, have you planted a tree yet?
No, did you?
Well, no, but the day's still young.
Yeah, the day is young, and it's important that we plant. We talked about this last week, so we won't dwell on that today. But if you do get a little plant one of these celebrations, be sure you plant it.
Well, let's get to what else is on your mind after I thank the Chevy Silverado and ChevyDriveChicago.com for sponsoring us today. There's never been a better time to put a Silverado in your toolbox. Okay, Mr. Fizz, take it away.
Now, I wanted to talk about another celebration we have coming up this week. May Day. It's next Wednesday. Flowers are in bloom. It's a beautiful time of year. You know, over the years, especially at my age, I remember a lot of old-fashioned traditions. One was a maypole. Maybe people that are listening don't even remember that. But one of the others that's a tradition from long ago that's perfect for today, and that's to surprise somebody with a bouquet. And the way to do it is to pick a few flowers from your garden or buy a couple of bunches of flowers from your neighborhood florist or chain store. They're already bunched up and tied very nicely, maybe with a ribbon on them. These work perfectly. You hang the little thing on a door. The important thing is to ring the bell and hide. The joy is in the surprise and then no one knowing where they came from. So it's a fun thing to do, and it gives somebody a nice time. Now, one other thing I want to talk about today is some gardening facts.
Okay.
Adults who garden an hour or more a week are 66% less likely to suffer heart attacks. Americans spend an average of about 4 hours a week on their lawns and gardens in the summer months. And 20% of our population spend 6 hours or more of a week gardening during the summer as a hobby. And why do we garden? First of all, it's not sinful. It's not fattening. It's not disruptive for the family because everybody can do it, and it's fun. So go garden.
Mr. Fizz, Jim Fizzell, our gardening guru. Thank you, sir. And on the calendar today, it's National Pretzel Day. I like those big soft ones, hot with cinnamon and sugar. Mm-mm. I'm Steve Alexander. That's the Business of Food on 720 WGN.
Tom Appel is answering questions about EVs and whatnot. Tom, you take some questions for us?
Happy to.
How does your guest feel about hybrid cars?
It's a very broad question because there are so many different types of hybrids. But in general, I love hybrid vehicles and especially well-executed hybrids. Toyota currently has a hybrid version of almost everything it sells, and it is the better version of that car. Better power, better performance, better resale value. Generally, the math works on going hybrid.
Does that include plug-in hybrid cars, that is, not just ones that have a battery, but ones that you can recharge at a charging station?
Oh, Toyota, for example, does sell plug-in hybrids. They are a different breed altogether. Plug-in hybrids are basically electric vehicles until you run out of electric power, and then they become regular hybrids. The problem with electric hybrids is if you don't plug them in, you're wasting your time and money because they are heavier than conventional hybrids because you have the hybrid battery. So your fuel economy is actually dragged down by the plug-in portion of the drivetrain. So you really want to make sure if you buy a plug-in hybrid that you are dedicated to plugging in.
Listening now on EV Talk, John, I'm wondering if your expert has any insight as to how is the stealing of the copper wire in the charging stations cables affecting the EV market. I hadn't heard about that.
I've only heard a little bit about it, and I don't know how widespread it is. I haven't seen a charging down for that, and I think maybe it's a big news story, but I don't know how widespread that is.
Please compare electric design of the Tesla versus MB. MB appears to have a whole engine in front.
I don't know what MV is.
MB, yeah, I don't either. Well, I wondered if they were thinking about the Chinese electric vehicle, but I don't remember the name of that. I'm not sure what MB is. You're not either, huh?
No.
Doesn't China have the dominant electric car on the market right now, though?
The best-selling electric car in the world keeps going back and forth between the Tesla Model Y and something that's built by BYD called the, I want to call it the Dolphin, but that's not right. The name escapes me at the moment. But BYD, a Chinese, privately owned Chinese electric car company, is one of the largest car EV builders in the world, and they are selling a very affordable EV in that market. It starts around $10,000.
Think about that. Ask about the trade-in value for EV cars.
The trade-in value is really low at the moment, unfortunately, for a bunch of reasons. One, Tesla started discounting its cars new, making them an alternative to used cars, which means that the glut of used cars grew. And then you have this weird situation where Tesla products are flooding the market because Hertz has abandoned, in part, its EV rental program.
Really?
So 30,000 Teslas are hitting the market right now.
Would you buy one of those?
I might, actually. The value is there. Actually, this is a good time to buy a new Tesla because they're so deeply discounted, and that might be the way I'd go.
Please compare. Oh, by the way, when that listener was asking about Teslas versus MBs, they were saying Mercedes-Benz. Do you know much about an electric Mercedes-Benz?
Yeah, I don't know how different they are. In principle, all electric vehicles are basically the same. What you're really looking for is the battery configuration. Most EVs are 400 volt batteries. You have 800 volt batteries that Tesla uses that makes for much faster charging. But that's the primary difference.
2 weeks ago, purchased a new Model 3 Tesla, and we love it. We charge it home, no problem.
Yeah, the Model 3 is the most affordable Tesla. It's a small sedan, very likable car. I know a couple of people who own them. They love them.
This listener says, does your guest believe Rivian will make it?
I hope so. Rivian's a really great company. They make a really very well-reviewed product. I've not had a chance to drive one. Right now they sell a midsize sedan, or I'm sorry, SUV and pickup, but they recently introduced smaller crossovers that are very interesting looking that should be much more affordable. Like to see them make it. It's a good product. They seem to have some technical innovation to bring to the world. I'm hoping. I think they will.
One of our listeners said they're concerned about the batteries needing to be disposed of someday. What do we know about the ecological impact of that?
Right now, things look good. There's a company out of California called Redwood Industries, or I'm sorry, it's called Redwood Materials, and they're one of the pioneers of battery recycling. But they say that they can recycle 95% of the important materials out of an EV battery. The good news about EV battery disposal is that the contents in it, the magnesium and the other elements, the lithium, are worth enough that it makes economic sense to try to harvest that stuff. So we're not likely to see a big pile of dead batteries on the side of the road.
How long before I can drive from Chicago to Atlanta? Currently, I take 1 5-minute gas stop without having to stop multiple times for 30 to 45 minutes to recharge. When that happens, I'm in on an electric SUV. What do you think about that? Chicago to Atlanta.
It depends on how you expect to drive it. We're probably not going to see EV range go much above 400 just because it gets expensive at that point, and then most consumers don't need more than that. So the question is, how much charging are you willing to accept? So how easy will the charging be, and how fast will the charging be? Those will be the limits, and it's getting better and better. The good news is that you can usually top off a vehicle to 80% in something like 30 minutes.
Tom, we're out of time. Tom Appel is the publisher of Consumer Guide Automotive. He's the host of Consumer Guide Car Stuff podcast. ConsumerGuide.com is the website for more insight like this. Tom, join us again. Thanks for your help today.
Have a great weekend. Thanks, John.